Good morning. This is The Burner. I am James Butler, and it is the genuinely outrageous hour of 6:06 a.m. on Thursday, 14th of November. Here is what matters today. And what really matters today was Boris Johnson's no good, very bad day yesterday. The flooding, which has seriously affected parts of the north of England throughout the past week, has finally made its way onto the Prime Minister's agenda. Having been reluctantly pressured into holding an emergency cabinet meeting, Johnson finally turned up yesterday and, as they say, went among the people. But, well, it didn't go entirely to plan. Here's one encounter.
Stay here.
Everyone's living in poverty, the whole country's a joke.
That's it!
The government, the council. No, mate, it's a joke. People are living on the streets. Kids are living on the streets. Nobody gives a f***. Nobody, man. Sort it out. Biggest thieves in the country, then.
Excuse me.
And another.
I'm not very happy about talking to you, so if you don't mind, I'll just
not
tell me what I'm
doing. Right.
She's not
helping
to express about what
you're
doing.
Yeah.
Where you been?
Oh, and another.
Well, so are you just sat here now? Is that a lie again?
Broken
we
promises.
Need to know. We need help.
100%.
The people were walking in here yesterday, Boris. You didn't see them. Little girls from Fish Lake with no shoes on their feet, Boris.
Trying.
A lady, a 78-year-old lady, Boris. It's heartbreaking.
This is a pattern we've seen before with Boris Johnson. It's funny, really. While it's undeniable Johnson has a particular appeal among a particular section of the electorate, it's one that doesn't translate into widespread approval or even just indifference. Of course, politicians and especially prime ministers divide populations sharply. Blair, Thatcher, even Cameron. But it does seem whenever Johnson goes out in public, he has some unfortunate meeting with someone who says something like, "Please leave my town." That these things happen to him shouldn't lead his opponents to assume there aren't many people who like him. But for a man who has historically billed himself as a champion of the people, these encounters are awkward. And this is why so many of Johnson's visits to schools and hospitals are carefully managed and choreographed. Politicised sixth formers or unruly doctors are locked away. But maybe there are deeper problems here. Is it possible that Johnson looked at Theresa May's 2017 campaign and thought, well, yes, such a highly personalised campaign would be just the ticket. Such a pity May had a robotic and aloof personality, but me, bozzer, I do it brilliantly. Highly personalised campaigns are a lot harder to run in practice than they are in theory. And one of Theresa May's rare moments of insight was her reported remark, "I'm not a presidential candidate." She wasn't, and he isn't either, not least because he often crumbles around real people and usually makes attempts at empathy look wildly insincere. But as much as the press are sometimes fascinated by Johnson's character, that wasn't what the anger was about. Lots of Tory strategists think that most voters who care about personality stuff have factored it in anyway. So much of the anger was about the effects of austerity, about people living in poverty, about successive governments which have taken the food out of the mouths of children. And this might present real problems for him. Half of Johnson's strategy seems to be that he can mark himself out from the previous decade of government through Brexit and claim that Brexit allows him to do all of the spending that previous governments couldn't or didn't. That way, he avoids being tarred with austerity, with universal credit, and, in this case, cuts to flood defences. But yesterday suggests this isn't really working. Johnson is as Tory comes, and people rightly see him and the party as the same. And that means he's carrying around the weight of the past 10 years. Compound that with the lack of empathy shown by his refusing to apologise and suggesting that people should plant some trees instead, it's hard to imagine how the day could have gone much worse. But the Tories are going on the attack today. They're using yet another headline figure to go after Labour, this time on migration. They're to claim today that Labour's free movement policy will mean 840,000 people coming here each year. Now, the methodology for this is about as misleading as the Lib Dem bar chart, but let's not let that detain us here. The campaigning logic is this. First, the big, scary number, which is supposed to have the same effect that Farage's notorious breaking point poster did during the referendum campaign and play to tabloid xenophobia. But it's also intended to trap Labour into a conversation about targets and target numbers, although as anyone familiar with the political history of migration targets knows, they're largely devices to stoke popular anger or pander to anti-migrant voters. The Tories are suspecting that any conversation based around targets is good for them and bad for the opposition. Now, Labour effectively has two responses open to it. Either it can go with something that's often been the instinct of Labour spokespeople on migration, which is to try to walk a tightrope, to defend migration in the abstract while coming hard on anything that looks like liberalisation of the border regime. Or it can try to push back hard, to say that this is a party so paranoid about migration, it deports British citizens because they're black, or point to the 39 deaths in the back of a refrigerated lorry as a plain, outrageous piece of evidence that the UK needs to get real about the consequences of this politics. It could also say simply that migration is of benefit to Britain, and it sure as hell wasn't a Polish nurse who slashed council budgets in half, was it? The Liberal Democrats are in a pickle. In Canterbury, they've imposed a candidate from Surrey as no local Lib Dem was willing to challenge the pro-Remain Labour incumbent in a Tory Labour marginal. Although they were willing to stand down for Dominic Grieve, the former Tory Attorney General, Chukwuemeka came out last night to say they couldn't do the same for David Gawk because of his role in welfare cuts. Those would be the same cuts the Lib Dems voted for in government, by the way, and which came back to haunt Jo Swinson yesterday, as her battle bus was blocked by protesters in Haringey, who objected to her trying to use a local youth centre for a speech. Joined up campaigning there. Labour and the SNP are fighting over the possibility of a second independence referendum. Nicola Sturgeon says she'll refuse to put Corbyn anywhere near power without him agreeing to it on her timetable. He says no, he wants to do investment and transformation, and last night suggested that an SNP, which kept the Tories in power, would suffer a similar electoral punishment as it did after 1979. The historical parallel probably isn't quite right, and in truth, I think Corbyn probably knows that a Labour government would find it difficult politically to refuse a Section 30 order for another referendum if the Scottish Parliament voted on one. But it's certainly not the argument he wants at the moment. And though we don't have time for it today, the story of Labour in Scotland will be an interesting one in this election, and it will be in some ways a reminder that basically thinking constitutional questions are a distraction or taking your electorate for granted might find the ground shift underneath you in ways that are really hard to recover. It's also a reminder that big constitutional questions really aren't going away in British politics anytime soon. More on that as the campaign goes on. A quick one on voter registration. In the fortnight since the election was announced, 1.5 million people have registered to vote. That is a phenomenal number. Research earlier this year showed around 16% of those eligible to vote are either missing or have serious errors with their registration. Here's a comparison as well. At this point in the last election, 58,000 18 to 25-year-olds had registered. This time around, it's around 67,300. But registration isn't everything. Just 10% of those in that age bracket are guaranteed to vote, as opposed to around 60% of those aged 65 plus. That means for any campaign relying on a youth vote, what are now registration strategies will have to transform to get out the vote strategies after the 26th when registration closes. And you can check out a conversation I had with Keir Milburn on generational differences back in the Navarra FM archive. Ahead of us today, it looks like Labour will be really trying to push the question of policy. With the Tories' manifesto rumoured to be delayed as late as possible before the election, Labour will be trying to demonstrate that they have a plan and the Conservatives don't. Laura Pidcock is also pushing on closing the gender pay gap today, and the Lib Dems are set to make an announcement on equalities attacking the two main parties. One reason for Labour messaging on the NHS becomes apparent today. According to extensive polling published by Hope Not Hate, health is the big issue for Labour leavers, ranked well above Brexit. Yesterday's shock ruling by the High Court against the CWU, the Postal Workers Union, that their ballot was suspect because, well, they organised and won it, should have reverberations across the wider Labour movement today. With what are already the most restrictive trade union laws in Europe, Britain seems to be making it virtually impossible to go on strike. Solidarity with the CWU. Election nomination deadline is 4 p.m. today, so Nigel Farage has until then to decide if he's going to stand down more Brexit Party candidates in Labour-Tory marginals. That is a vital question for those seats, and as we've already seen so far, it's very hard to predict what he'll do. My bet, he won't. The issue of the day is almost certainly going to be migration, with the press engaged in its favourite sordid reach around between legitimate concerns and outright xenophobia. The reaction to it will doubtless also colour Labour's manifesto meeting this weekend, where policy passed on free movement at conference will have to be turned into a manifesto commitment. Expect lobbying on that. On Navarra Media this evening, the daring duo of Michael Walker and Aaron Bastani are on Tisky Sour at 8 p.m. Do tune into that on our YouTube. And as you know, I want to hear from you. Tell me about the issues, campaigns and mobilisations going on in your part of the UK. I also want stories. I want concerns. I want anything else at all. Just send them to me at james@navarramedia.com or tweet on the hashtag TheBurner. That's it. This is The Burner. And I'll see you tomorrow. Have a very good morning. This broadcast is brought to you by Navarra Media. Go to support.navarramedia.com.